Hi, this is Hayes. So this episode was recorded on Saturday morning. And the next morning, Sunday morning, Kobe Bryant was killed in a helicopter accident. So we do not talk about it in this episode. But I wanted to address it because Kobe Bryant was a figure of importance and meaning in Los Angeles that I don't think has really been fully recognized and grasped by a lot of people, even as people are memorializing him today. I think for a couple of decades of all the people associated with Los Angeles, I don't think there was probably anybody who was more beloved by more people in this city. I think he was a unifying force in a way that transcended race and class, that is not something that we tend to see in this city. Just someone who, of all the different kinds of people who live here, that people from all those different groups knew him and loved him and loved what he did. I don't really think there's too much that we would have said or that there really is to say about the circumstances of his death, other than that it was a horrible tragedy for his family, for the families of the other people that were killed in the crash, and also just that if it can happen to someone like him, who at times seemed like one of the least mortal people in Los Angeles, that all of our lives are finite, and it's a good reason just to think about how we spend them. So here is the show. Thank you.
Monday, January 27th. This is LA Podcast. We have Alyssa Walker. Hey, Davenport. I am Scott Frazier. How are you guys doing?
Fine. Another busy week. Yeah. A lot going on.
Our weeks have been so packed with things going on that we are weaving stories on the side
Huge
of the road that we have to like pick
Huge
up at a later
one.
It feels like it's been like a year since the last show.
Yes. And so now we have to scoop up a couple abandoned stories, even though there's a lot to talk about this week. So
last week, Hayes said it had been like the first two episodes of the year had been a decade. Now it's been another year. We're aging quite rapidly at this point.
2021.
Does anyone have an LA story from this week that they would like to share?
Alyssa?
I was hoping we could all talk about our count experiences maybe.
Great.
As stories, because I'm sure we all...
Mine is not super interesting because I was at home base at the Silver Lake.
Oh, that's interesting. That is interesting, I feel like.
It's not as interesting as going out and counting. It's mostly being scared that people are not going to return.
Oh, really? Does that happen a lot?
No, I mean, they do come back, but just like when every other team has come back except one or two, you're like, am I going to be in trouble?
They called us. Never return. Did you have that happen when you were out counting they like did like a some kind of robocall or something where they called? I mean, they didn't robocall, it was like a real person.
Oh, yeah.
But they call you and make
sure. Yes, we called.
Is
teams.
Everything okay?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's what you're supposed
to do. I don't feel like that didn't happen last year. Maybe I counted so fast last year that nobody called me, but that was nice. I was at PATH again this year, and we had a part of I guess like Westlake, kind of like East Westlake, kind of by Good Samaritan Hospital, where there was really not much to be seen. It was different for other people who counted in other groups. And there was someone I met who actually tweeted at us who was at PATH before we went out. And then they counted MacArthur Park and they did say they thought the park was, and I had just been through the park a few days before And I, that number that they said was like, did not match up with my impression of, you know, seeing what had been at the park a few days before. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you guys had the same experience. I don't think anybody in my count area had been swept, or it's just a part of the area. It's part of the city where there's just a lot of services and there's a lot of foot traffic. So not a lot of people are probably camping out or mm-hmm. anything. And there weren't even that many people in vehicles. But I wonder if you thought that there were parts of the city where numbers were lower or things had been changed in your experiences, or people said that to you.
I didn't really. I heard the thing about MacArthur Park. I drove around a little bit the day of just to kind of see. Echo Park was a little bit lighter, understandably, because there's been so much upheaval there, which we'll talk about. The Los Feliz, like the Hollywood and Vermont intersection. That goes off and on at different times, mm-hmm. and it was definitely in a low period in terms of the number of people who were there. But others seemed to be, like, I remember last year I did the count around the Hoover and Temple encampment, and one entire side mm-hmm. of it was completely gone. There were still people on Hoover, but fewer at, like, an adjacent area. But, like, in general, I would say yes, it looked like there were fewer tents than we have become accustomed to over the course of this year, mm-hmm. which I think is explicable by the sweeps that have been going on around the city.
Some of them even like really happening simultaneously with the count at mm-hmm. Echo Park. I didn't actually go out this year. I clicked around a couple of the count sites around my house and they were full. And then
it was packed.
That's great because they were not full like up less than a week before the count.
I'm sure that some of the like, especially some of the outer, more suburban areas right. probably did still need additional volunteers at that point in time. I just didn't have a way to get out there.
I think in general, people kind of filled in those gaps. I think 300 people showed up to volunteer in Hollywood. Like they were all like really packed
and
out.
And there were so many people that I met that it was their first time and that they didn't know about it until whatever different reasons, which is great. But then I heard also from a lot of people, well, what do we do now? And they didn't feel like they walked away from the count with a real like mandate to mm-hmm. help. I'm sure you'll get an email mm-hmm. from Lhasa. You could sign up maybe for other things, but I do wish maybe it's not an activist activity. Maybe it's just
but what a missed opportunity.
I know. So a lot of people were like, can you tell me what I do tomorrow? Like, where do I go tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And that is the question I think we should all be asking ourselves. But also, you know, I was like, you got to keep counting. This is what I always say. Like, you learn how to count now. You got to figure out, like, how to connect people with help, what to advocate for, where do people go for services, where are people going to the bathroom? Like, start to think in your head, like, how is this working? Mm-hmm. And then I guess you sign up for things like Everyone In has that email and they have like some webinars you can join or something. And then, of course, all the local groups. But yeah, I wish that had been the final like training part. Right.
Sure. Seal is adding a lot more opportunities that people can sign up for. Oh, saw my first movie star doing the count.
Whoa.
Alden Ehrenreich, Han Solo from Solo, Star Wars Story. It was great in Hail Caesar, too.
Oh, man. Hail Caesar was a good one. That was really good.
It's really funny in that movie.
Cool. Well, that's excellent. Good to see people turning up for that. My LA story, I guess I can go down a completely different path and talk about the California Consumer Protection Act, which I don't think I've talked about on this show yet.
Here we go. They're getting juicy.
Another.
How have you not talked about
this? LA Podcast reports. LA Podcast on your side.
Okay, I'm
chasing someone through a parking lot. Sir!
Do you have my data?
I do actually have updates on the Ellis Act one, but I guess I'll save that for a future installment. But I'm really excited about this. California Consumer Protection Act was something that was passed in Sacramento a couple years ago, 2018, and it is intended to protect Californians from data theft and mismanagement and the undisclosed sale of personal information. This is something that kind of matches the GDPR, the European Union's data security protocol that they put in place.
Which is why you have to agree to cookies or whatever every time you go to a website now,
right? Yeah. So now California's own Consumer Protection Act just went into force January 1st of this year. And I have started seeing the little button that says, do not sell my personal information on major websites.
Yes.
And I am just loving it. Because basically what it is doing is it's saying, you select that, do not sell my personal information. Then the website has to tell you, the company has to tell you, how they are using your personal information, who they are transferring it to, and you have the ability to opt out of it, to see what they've done with your information in the past year, and then to have all of it deleted if they have any previously collected data about
it's
you.
It's so awesome.
It's really cool.
And I love the idea of someone seeing that option and just being like, yeah, you know what? Sure. I sell my personal information.
I love that the wording has to be, sell my personal information don't. So as an LA podcast reports seeding a future edition of this series, I have put in requests with a handful of companies, Target, Wells Fargo, Amazon, and they all have to respond within 45 days, which is part of the law. So I will see what's happening. This is my...
Thank you, Scott.
This is my 23andMe. Where has my data gone?
That was Assemblymember Ed Chow and Senator Bob Hertzberg who put that through. It's very heroic. But it started... I watched a Frontline about this. It was kind of a lone hero who made this happen, which is this real estate developer named Alistair McTaggart, who had a conversation at a party.
Sounds like a lone hero name, right?
He was talking at a party with some guy that worked in tech, and the guy was like, Alistair was like, should I be worried about how much data there is of me on the internet? And the guy pulled out his phone and showed him how much of Alistair McTaggart's personal data he could access just from his phone from working at this tech company. So he basically threw away everything in his life to get this law on the books so that people could opt to not sell their personal information. I just want to talk about a little bit of something that's going on in the room. Bart has taken up permanent residence.
Has never
on Alyssa.
Cuddled
He's cuddling
with me
very
like
aggressively.
That.
He also kneads with his claws a lot.
Oh, yeah. I feel that.
And he knows it. He knows that it hurts and he doesn't care. I want to talk about, I was back at Echo Park Lake this week. The saga there is ongoing. Just a quick recap. Last week, the Parks Department announced that they were going to do a 5-day sweep of Echo Park, which is unprecedented. They said it was because of a film shoot for a Nike commercial. The production company for the commercial said, no, it's not. We didn't ask for this. And it basically got canceled thanks to the group of activists, both housed and unhoused around the lake. So what happened this week is they announced a 1-day cleanup for Friday, that they were going to throw out everyone's tents unless they were moved and they had to like be out by 6 a.m. or whatever it was. This is part of the escalation in the number of sweeps and enforcement of this rule 5611, which is on the books and basically says your tent has to be up from, I believe, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. every day or else.
I mean, up, down. You said up.
I mean,
fold it
picked up. Yeah.
and put away. Okay. Yes. And they've been the city has basically announced, like LA, that sanitation has announced that they are going to be enforcing this law going forward. So to basically decrease the visibility of homelessness, not will have absolutely no effect on anyone getting into housing, and in many cases will make it harder. The thing about Echo Park Lake that I want to underscore, like, this is not better or worse necessarily, but this is a special community for this moment that lives in Echo Park Lake specifically. It is a group of people that are willing to make this a political act. Mm-hmm. They understand leverage and getting a message out in a way that it would be totally justified, but a lot of people who are homeless will just like kind of feel like they have to just do whatever they're told because there's a lot at stake for them. They could be arrested. They could go to the jail. Like in a lot of cases of interactions with police, they could be hurt in some way. The people at Echo Park Lake have marshaled forces in the community that have been able to make this a much bigger story in a very effective way.
I went out on Friday morning. I was late. I showed up at like 7:45 a.m. People were there starting before 7. There were already probably 100 people out there. I watched there so many legal observers, people in those green hats that say like legal observer, like don't touch me. Like people from all different groups, Ground Game, K-Town for All, Sela, people were there, Street Watch, L.A. kind of organized this thing. And the park rangers and sanitation had already shown up when I got there, and they were sort of telling everyone, you know, you got to get rid of the tents or we're going to throw them out, or we're going to, like, I talked to some people there that were anticipating that arrests were going to happen. People from the city were getting ready for the arrests to start. They brought in a bulldozer. We all sat in front of it.
Why did they bring in a bulldozer?
To pick to pick up everyone's stuff and throw it out. I mean,
God.
When I say a bulldozer, I don't really know what the word is. It was a big
sure, it was
a
huge, heavy machinery.
Big scooper. Yeah, a big like heavy
a
machinery.
Big scooper.
A big scooper.
Scooper is
that's
the
what
term.
I would have called it when I was 5 and still do today.
Another big scooper, Emily Albert Reyes, was there.
She was there.
Live
yes.
tweeting.
That's good. Yeah, there were a JD Carrere from Spectrum was there all day. It was extremely moving. I was kind of quietly sobbing almost the entire time because you just look out
yeah.
at all these people
yeah.
that are defending their neighbors. And basically what the community at the lake was asking for was a meeting with Councilmember Mitch O'Farrell. That's mm-hmm. all they really wanted. They put out a letter to him only a couple days before, basically saying, yeah. we will keep this. We have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
This is the only place that we really feel like safe. We have a community here. We protect each other. We will keep it clean. We will adhere to like certain rules, but like, please let us stay here because we have no other option.
And I have to say something as a family that uses that park, which is what a lot of people have come out and said, like, oh, well, what about the families that use the park? That park is so clean,
yeah,
despite
is.
The fact that many people are living in it.
Yeah.
We have never had a problem. We have never even seen really anything that has been troubling to us in mm-hmm. any way. Even as we, you know, go to that playground yeah. often and ride our bikes around the lake, and
it's not even noticeable, really.
No,
like compared to like everywhere else you go in LA,
yeah,
it's harder
yeah,
to
I
notice
mean, you,
that there
I could,
are people
I can think
there.
Of like 5 or 6 other parks that we've gone to, and there's been issues, or mm-hmm. you know, not that there's always issues, but there's or just like tons of trash where I think it would alarm some parents.
Mm-hmm.
It is not like that at Echo Park Lake. It is pristine, I have
yeah.
to say.
And I mean, I have spent a huge amount of time there. I have never felt remotely unsafe. And like the one issue that I know of was that there was a domestic violence issue with a couple living at the lake.
Right.
And the other people living at the lake threw this guy, like physically threw the guy out.
Yeah.
And he's no longer welcome there.
Yeah.
So like they have built something there that is unique and comes with the fact that they were kind of allowed to create it. I mean, like, that's true. Echo Park Lake had lighter enforcement
yeah.
than a lot of sidewalks because it was park ranger enforced instead of LAPD enforced.
And also, I just want to mention something else from that letter, which I don't think a lot of people think about, but they did highlight they used to live in that neighborhood in
yeah.
houses.
Yeah.
You know, it's not any different. You know, people are like, why did they end up here? Why are people here? These are people that already lived in this council district and that have jobs probably a few blocks away. And like, of course you would pick a place that had grass and bathrooms and access to water if
yeah.
you needed a place to stay, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
We have, what, 60? Is it 60 people-ish in that?
That's what they estimated. And there were probably, I don't know if you've done like an official count or if there's been like a...
It varies.
You know, yeah, I'm like, sure it must vary. But that is 60 people who are part of the letter.
Yeah, right.
Said,
so,
yeah.
I mean... whatever it is, it's dozens of people who are living at Echo Park Lake, by and large, people who have been in Echo Park for an extended period of time, writing this open letter to their council member who represents them. Mitch O'Farrell, we
His
talked about.
Is almost visible.
Almost. You can see the back of it yeah. from there. And then we discussed last week, I think Alyssa read the quote from O'Farrell in December where he was saying like his duty is to his constituents, which he meant like not including the unhoused people in his district. But it's frankly not true on several counts.
Mm-hmm.
They are his constituents currently. They have been for a long period of time and they're trying to get a positive response from him.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously when you're like on the ground, there's a lot of anger at Mitch O'Farrell, but the letter was just purely like a gesture of love and like totally conciliatory and all that. But they wanted to meet with him to set the terms of this. They did not get a response to the letter in the short term. And by the time of the Friday morning sweep, had not really gotten any kind of response. This is all part of, I think, the mixed messages around what is happening around the sweeps and homelessness enforcement in general now, where the city says, OK, these are like we're enforcing 5611 now. Like it, but it's it used to be outreach led, but then it was sanitation led, but now it's LAPD and council office led.
Right.
But when it comes down to like getting these things canceled, you cannot get anyone to say like I have the authority to cancel this.
Right.
Sure.
LAPD did a deputy chief showed up to the lake. They were asking for someone from O'Farrell's office. No one from there did, but an LAPD deputy chief came to talk to the people living at the lake. And basically said, we don't have the authority. This is a sanitation-led project. We cannot stop it.
Yeah.
We just do what we're just following orders. Like we.
It did say he would meet with them from the police, right? He said to the group, like, I'll be happy to come meet with you, but actually it's like up to the rangers and sanitation.
There's nothing I can do.
Right, yeah, yeah.
He said. Even though I believe under the new rules, it was taken out of park ranger hands and maybe even sanitation hands.
I don't know the overlap with the parks department. I don't know how that works.
It's confusing, maybe on purpose.
It seems like it is weaponized bureaucracy.
It makes it very easy to defer responsibility.
That was how I felt when I was at the Hollywood encampment that I was at, that I talked about during last week's show, was that it's very rarely in the life of a citizen of this city that you get to see the interaction of multiple, like the direct interaction of multiple departments of the city of Los Angeles. So getting the view of you have city sanitation, LASA, which is of course city county, the police department, and then later speaking with the council members' office, like having all of them essentially point the finger at one another and say, this is just happening. Like it's a natural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. None of us have control over it. One of the first police that was there actually said to me, like, you know, we're all just trying to get through this as though it were a natural event. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't have the ability to stop this or to tell you like what's going to happen. It does seem like weaponizing the bureaucracy.
And I mean, that's like to your point, that was another takeaway as I was like looking out at this scene at Echo Park Lake, probably 10 cops there, 6-7 park rangers, maybe a dozen sanitation workers, a huge dump truck, big scooper, the money involved in what ended up, by the way, being a project that did not go through. They ended up doing like basically nothing.
They picked up some trash. They did some bagging of trash.
People were cheering as they were like raking leaves and like throwing them out. But they, like what it came to eventually is they said they would go away if two people just collapsed their tents. Then this entire apparatus of like 30 people or whatever it was would leave if two people just took the poles out of their tents and collapsed them. And the people that the lake were like, no.
Love it.
Because they said, all we want to do is like have a meeting about this with our council member. This is a gesture of just like you exerting your authority for its own sake. There's no justification for this. We're not doing it.
Yeah.
And no one was arrested, which is different from actually, I should mention earlier that week, two people that are, I think were kind of perceived as the ringleaders of this effort who are living at the lake were arrested for smoking weed at the lake, which if that were enforced equally, we would like the jails would be overflowing.
City of LA wouldn't exist.
Yes. So they arrest, and one of them is a guy who I've known for a while who says that he does not smoke at all, and I believe him, but he has been filming the Rangers and LAPD a lot, and he believes that this was retribution for that. And so that cost a huge amount of money, arrest him, bring him in. He said he was in jail for about an hour and then left. And it's now he has a citation. And what was the point?
What was the point
of any of this?
I have to say, like, the thing that is striking to me I mean, you could say like, but for the grace of God, but really Mitch O'Farrell was part of the city council that voted to extend their own terms. So he is very fortunate that he does not have an election coming up like immediately. And he is very fortunate that he does not have to face the public in a more direct way until 2022 when his term expires, because I personally cannot think of a single more exposed politician in this city who is more mismatched with the people in his district, with the sentiment in his district, who is more reprehensibly cowardly when it comes to actually facing and communicating with his constituents. I say this as a resident of CD13. And I posted on Twitter the experience that my partner Sarah had trying to talk to them and tell them not to sweep, but rather to provide services for people in District 13. They frequently shut down. They not only shut down the lines of communication with the public and berate people for trying to speak to them, but they also physically shut down their office. They did it
both times.
They did it a week ago when the 5-day sweep at Echo Park Lake was posted the first time. They did it on the day that you two were out there, and a group from Street Watch and from the lake went out to the council member's office, and they tried to get somebody from the council member's office to come out and speak with them. They were rebuffed.
Their office, which has reflective windows, by the way, as well. So you can barely even see if someone's in there.
Yeah.
There are people peeking in and be like, "Someone, I can see someone's bag." So it looks like somebody is inside. And eventually someone showed up on the intercom. But
And eventually someone came out and took down the signs that had been posted. Yes. And told them to like leave. And then they went back inside. This is not somebody like this. We've talked about District 13 a lot, and not just because it's where two of us happen to live, but also it is, broadly speaking, the center of one of the most progressive areas in LA. And Mitch O'Farrell, as council member, simply does not reflect that and has not been responsive to. I mean, his office actually said they did not receive this open letter, which was posted online and also had been sent directly to his office until like something like what, 8 p.m. What time did they actually come out and announce that they were making some changes to the lake?
Last night. Well, so this is
there's two things. I mean, there was things announced earlier in the week in committee, and I don't know, emergency funding for certain things, not just Echo Park Lake, but other
basic services. I think it included the lake.
It included the lake, right. And then, but then also Friday night.
Around like 7.
I was going to say 6 or 7. Another announcement was sent out that with more specifics, perhaps. So it was keeping the bathrooms open 24 hours a day with an attendant, bringing the mobile shower unit closer. I mean, I think in an earlier report or something, it was like, oh, there's a mobile shower unit nearby. It's on Alvarado. You still got to walk all the way over to Alvarado. It's not that close. And one more thing, I can't really remember what
storage
else
unit.
Oh,
storage unit. The interim shelter.
Okay, yeah. So there's an emergency shelter somewhere nearby, but you have to think about this is the same blocks where there's a contested affordable housing development, and then across Sunset is the library where there's supposed to be safe parking.
Right.
Being opened for over a year.
Well, he said in his announcement, we have Edendale Safe Parking coming up.
Yeah, but like when? I mean, we're still waiting. So, and on the other side of not necessarily CD13, but the other side of Silver Lake and Echo Park, you have somebody suing, a homeowner suing for a temporary shelter that's going up on Riverside. So where are these things going to be? How fast are they going to open? I mean, keeping the bathrooms open 24 hours a day is a great idea. That should have happened immediately. You know, these are simple things to solve.
Hey, you're an NBA guy. It just sounded to me like one emergency shelter location to be named later.
It was kind of like that. It was the whole thing is, I mean, once again, shame works that this happened the same day as he is getting dragged up and down my feed for
Echo Park Lake was trending.
That's
remarkable.
Yes, it was the number one trend locally.
It was a tweet like somebody like got engaged or something. Echo Park Lake. And I was like, oh, you're Like that tweet was competing with it. Anyway.
I do wonder, I mean, like not just about Mitch O'Farrell, although, I mean, we are now a week on from this whole saga starting. We are on like their sixth or seventh lie about what is happening mm-hmm. with these sweeps. I think that when I called their office, now they're saying this is not part of a coordinated plan or change or anything. This is regular maintenance of the park. And like, don't you want us to do regular maintenance on the park? It's all a pack of lies. And the question that I have is, what will it take not just for Mitch O'Farrell's office, but for all of City Council, 15 of them, to acknowledge that this is a concerted effort to return to criminalizing the homeless and really crack down on their ability to exist anywhere in the public realm? And I don't know what that the lies that they've come out with have just been so brazen.
So this is to your point about there being a mismatch with Mitch O'Farrell and his constituency and how he seems to take a harder line on homelessness compared to what the people want who live in his district. I think that's more about basically clumsiness and just a lack of political ability than it is about him being different from the vast majority of the other council members. They're just better at pulling this off.
Yeah.
He made himself the face of 4118D, which was a totally huge mistake and ended up like destroying his reputation. Even like other council members were chastising him for
just remind everybody what that was. Remember, it was
making it illegal to sleep on the sidewalk
or look at somebody the wrong way.
Basically anywhere.
Yes. But what's happened now with stepping up 5611, they managed. I mean, this basically seems like it's coming from Nuri Martinez's office, the new council president. But she has managed to have it be diffuse, like where it is coming from. So suddenly there was just these new LA City sanitation regulations that had been like a study had been ordered by City Council. But there's no one person out in front saying it's to your point, Scott, about like they're just it's like an act of God is what they have managed to make it seem like in a way that Mitch O'Farrell just has not pulled off.
Yeah.
And also, like you're saying, no other council member has said a word about this unless it is approving.
I mean, that is I would say the exhortation that I would have for activists is the goal is just, it's very similar to what we see at the federal level. You see sort of like not only the weaponization of the bureaucracy, but also the weaponization of the civility with which people are normally inclined to approach, like, you know, like you want to give the benefit of the doubt to people.
Yep.
So we have like, it would be seen as like unfair to attribute this to any one particular council member. But the goal for activists should be make them admit that this is something that they are doing in a concerted way. There's no reason to give credence to the fact that this is something that the city council of this city has no control over.
And the reason why this is happening with 5611, that didn't even come up for a vote. They managed to just get that to be a new sanitation regulation because it was a law already on the books that now they're just deciding to enforce.
Yeah.
But here's how this has worked in the past. Remember 8502? Where 8502 said that basically you couldn't sleep in your car in the vast majority of the city. 8502 lapsed. It is no longer city law. I was scared to talk about it on the show for like to remind someone that this happened. But they got a huge amount of pushback at the council last time. So I think they voted unanimously a couple times to extend it. Then they voted again and Mike Bonin wasn't there, but he said that he would have voted against it had he been there. That was the first dissenting voice. And now they've just decided, with really no acknowledgement or fanfare at all, not to even bring it up again. They're just letting it go. They don't want this smoke, as the kids say. And so things like that, it demonstrates the impact of people pushing back on it. They don't do well with attention. 8502 also I've been thinking about recently because they said at the time, every time they voted to pass 8502 to extend it and make it illegal for people to sleep in their cars, they say, well, we don't enforce this. Like, there's only a few examples of us like enforcing it. It's like just in case of emergencies. What's happening right now with 5611, which says that you cannot have a tent up in the daytime, shows like the logical result of passing laws that you don't intend to enforce. 5611 wasn't enforced for a really, really long time because it's
really expensive. It does nothing. It just terrorizes people. And now it is being enforced. Yep. So one came into power, Councilmember Nuri Martinez, mm-hmm. who said, oh, I have this weapon at my disposal that I can use to get rid of visible homelessness.
Yeah.
And now they have decided to start using it. They could do that with 8502. They could do that with any of these other. You cannot pass something and say like, oh, well, we don't want to use it. Somebody will eventually.
It is actually like one of the like most tried and true, like reactive weapons in the book for a politician to just say, I am not asking for anything special. I'm just saying enforce what's on the books.
Yes.
It's common sense. Enforce what's on the books.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to use that pulpit as a weapon against people who have no protection. So, yes. that really shouldn't be on the books if it's not intended to be enforced, which, of course, it was.
Yes. Let's press on. We got to talk about, we missed this story last week. It was a big one. Let's talk about what happened in Cudahy, Alyssa.
Yeah. So we was it 2 weeks ago? We had a jet that took off for Singapore.
Mm-hmm, a Delta jet.
From LAX. Realized something was wrong, but we're not quite sure still what was wrong. Something was wrong, and they needed to make emergency landing.
Yeah, they needed to return to LAX.
And that's really all we do know. But at some point, they also decided that they needed to dump enough jet fuel to get you to Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Because I think you can't land.
You can't land, yes. But so there are different protocols for when and how and why you do dump jet fuel. And that hasn't been made explicitly clear. But you know a lot of communities that are in the flight path from LAX. They have to deal with a lot of impacts from being in the flight path of LAX. Most of them related to air pollution and noise pollution. But in this case, a schoolyard full of children got jet fuel dumped on their heads. And they thought that it was rain. It was so much. It didn't dissipate. There were a lot of, you love these people who are like, it's not that bad. It happens all the time. A lot of it dissipates. It's just like.
A lot of it dissipates. There is a minimum altitude at which you're supposed to do a jet fuel dump. And this plane was considerably underneath that. The one other thing that we know.
I mean, you watch the video and you can see it's so low and you can see it.
The one other thing that we know, in addition to what you mentioned, was the recording of the traffic or the chatter between the air traffic controller and the pilots was released, and the air traffic control tower actually asked them, do you need to dump fuel? And they said no.
Yeah.
And then
they suggested, if you do, please do it over
keep
the ocean.
Going. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're almost there.
Yeah. and then instead they dumped it over a schoolyard full of children. And this story is if you think about it, like, the reason why LAX is the fourth busiest airport in the world is because if you think about any other major metro area in America, the really big ones, there are multiple airports that carry a considerable amount of traffic. New York has three airports of not equal size, but they're all fairly large. So each of those is way less traffic than LAX. You think about the Bay Area, they have SFO, they have Oakland, they have San Jose, they have all these airports that carry a relatively smaller amount of traffic. Then you think about LA, and LA has LAX with, like, I think now 90 million passengers a year going through it.
It was up every year, the number of passengers, and they keep making it bigger.
The other airports, Burbank, Ontario, Santa Ana, like, these carry virtually no traffic by design, because they're in communities that have said, we will not accept any more air traffic. We don't want the environmental impacts that you're talking about, Alyssa. They don't want noise. Burbank has a voluntary curfew.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're pushing back.
Right. I was going to say, compare that discussion with what's going on in Burbank right now, with like even slight changes to flight paths and, you know,
Zev Yaroslavsky, when he was on the city council, like, put a limit on the amount of traffic that those, like, neighborhoods should be forced to deal with. Then we have South LA, of course, and anything fucking goes in South LA. Mm-hmm. You can dump tons and tons of jet fuel on children. You can fly, like, how many planes land at LAX every minute, even. It's like, it's insane. Yeah. There's no restraint, and there's like really no empathy at all for what brown and black communities have to mm-hmm. deal with, because the Valley and Orange County don't want any
right.
any part of this, basically.
And also what you have here just in the particular kind of belt is a lot of different very small cities like this one, which is, you know, 95% Latino, I believe.
Yes.
And like
it's also
majority,
like,
you know, probably almost all renter, mm-hmm, you know, right?
Yeah. And it's tiny. It's 1 square mile.
It's 1 square mile.
But it's incredibly dense.
Incredibly dense, lots of people. So I met this mayor, Elizabeth Alcantar, who is 26 years old. She was on the city council and has now become the new mayor. And she is the most impressive 26-year-old mayor, you know, one of the most impressive 26-year-olds I've ever met. And I think this is going to be a real moment where we see a lot of these communities fighting back, because she has taken this. She has harnessed the anger of her community in a very smart way. And now four of the teachers are suing Delta, which I think is the right path forward to get mm-hmm. attention. We have, like, you know, our powerful teachers union. We have all these great communities that are going to help, you know, rally around, which is really like, you know, kids in a schoolyard. How bad can you get that had to be treated for? And Delta's response was just not in any way, you know, adequate to what yeah. actually happened. So I think that this is a real moment for environmental justice and for environmental racism, and like what could actually happen in this flight path. And you know me, I just want to shut down all the airports and require that all the money goes to train funding anyway. But I do think we're going to see something here, and I will credit her for being angry enough to get everybody's attention.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what happens. I hope that something positive comes from this. We talk about, like I mentioned at the top of this, there is a minimum altitude where you're supposed to do these types of jet fuel dumps. That's set by the FAA, and the FAA also is what's determining, you know, the allowable amount of traffic into and out of LAX and what the flight path looks like, etc. They have a lot of control over, like, even if you talk about the built environment of Los Angeles, the FAA is the reason why the Inglewood SoFi Stadium for the Rams is being built sort of like half underground, because they didn't want it to interfere with the flight path. It's also the reason why there's a height limit on skyscrapers in downtown LA.
And that's what people are mad about in Burbank as well, that the FAA has new rules about takeoff and landing, which the flight paths are lower, uh-huh. which you can kind of see. I mean, this is like totally maybe not true, but like it feels like the planes are coming in a little bit lower yeah. than they have in the past. And that, like, there are new regulations around this, but like, yes, like,
yeah,
you're saying,
no,
the
totally.
FAA has a huge amount of control over
they it. Have a lot of power. So it's a complicated battle. And I really hope that Cudahy is able to I think that they will probably be successful in their suit against Delta, the air carrier, but I would hope that we will see some sort of discussion more systematically about how these regulations are set and determined, and what needs to be taken into account for the communities mm-hmm. that live under the flight path.
It's a big deal for Cudahy too, that they have someone in power now who is using that position in a positive way. There is a history in a lot of gateway cities of mayors and other officials using that position to extort money from business interests. And I think two mayors ago of Cudahy went to jail for taking bribes to site a marijuana dispensary, which we would never do in a city like Los Angeles,
yeah.
a sophisticated city like LA. But yeah, to have someone like her in this position is so meaningful for representation in cities like that. Let's talk about another story that we didn't talk about last week that is huge and continuing to evolve. LAPD and their Metro division, always referred to as their elite Metro division.
I love that epithet.
Had a scandal break out, like a hugely significant one, where a number of officers, I believe as many as 20 now, were being investigated for falsifying field interview cards from traffic stops and basically labeling people that they had stopped as gang members mm-hmm. when there was no evidence to indicate that. So investigators, I guess, went in. Well, first what happened is a woman, a mom, got a notification from the LAPD that her son had been interviewed at a traffic stop, and it had been decided that he was a gang member. And she, to her credit, I don't know if my mom would have believed the situation, said, no, he's not.
Yeah.
And said, check the body cam footage and compare it to what's in this field interview card. And they did. And it came out that there was no evidence, no conversation, no evidence of this person being a gang member. And then they kept looking at some of this footage and comparing it to these field interview cards. And apparently this is a widespread issue. And they've now found up to 20 officers who have been regularly falsifying this information to up their stats. And now stats are sort of the core issue of this story. We've talked about how the new chief, Michael Moore, is like a big data guy. He loves to like crunch numbers.
Yeah. Moneyball.
Yes. These officers, and this is always kind of, this isn't new with Chief Moore, but LAPD officers basically get points for the number of, for the trouble they dig up.
Right.
Basically. So whether it's guns and drugs seized, or the, like the number of gang members that they enter into the system, their productivity is judged on that basis. And you get a performance review at the end of the year, and you are like considered a less productive officer if you haven't had as many interactions with criminality. And so it is in their interest to fake this information, put people in a database as a gang member when there is no justification for to do that. One officer has been fired.
Yep.
The first one of all that have that are being investigated. This is a big deal. The LAPD just, I haven't seen the Police Protective League speak up for this person, which is very rare. They tend to, like, the first time I can remember the Police Protective League, the union of the police, not defending an officer was a few months ago. Another story we didn't talk about where that officer was found guilty of fondling the breasts of a deceased woman.
Right.
And then they decided, like, okay, this is the person that we're not going to speak up for. But in many cases of what they call officer-involved shootings where someone is killed, they'll say, oh, this is like,
let us do our jobs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But in this case, one officer is being fired. I have to assume that there will be more. Three officers have been placed on leave, including the one that is that they are now moving to fire. The investigation is ongoing. This is a huge, huge story. And I think it proves a lot of what people have assumed. And it sort of goes hand in hand with what we learned about. It was CHP, right? On the five.
No, it was the sheriff's department.
Yes, that special.
I was
going to
say, we know this is not an isolated thing, too. Yeah. So, like the concern that you're bringing up, Hayes, with regard to this sort of elite unit being more pressured and more susceptible to breaking the law in order to up their numbers more, so to speak. That is something we've also seen with the Sheriff's Department. We had a scandal on the five last year with the like interdepartmental drug task force there, which was compared to California Highway Patrol targeting Latinx drivers and trying to find drugs by whatever means necessary or by whatever means available, and particularly by means of racial profiling. So these elite units do seem to be like basically a code word for, we are going to violate your civil rights. Mm-hmm. We are going to lie about you in order to attempt to bolster our own credentials and justify our existence as a subunit of law enforcement. And that is something that, if it is as widespread as you would seem to think from these two stories in Los Angeles law enforcement, it's something that everybody should be really concerned about, especially because we are a majority minority city. And it does seem like we have multiple police entities operating like we're going to make it seem that anybody who's brown or black is part of a gang. We're going to cite and arrest people who have done nothing wrong and lie about it. And there's not a media structure in place that is really calling those officers to account. If it weren't for the mom that you're talking about in this story, like, how long would this have gone on for?
Yeah. I have to say I'm pleasantly surprised that LAPD extended the investigation into other officers. It would have been easy for them to say this guy did, after this, it was reported by this mom, to say this guy did this bad thing. He's fired. End of story.
but it's been extended out. According to reports in the LA Times, there is more evidence of malfeasance in these stops that showed up on the body cameras than just falsifying information. So hopefully we find out what that is. The footage should be released, frankly. One issue that I'm curious to see where this goes, and a lot of it will depend on the election coming up soon. Firing is one thing. Prosecution is another. This is potentially a criminal act that these officers have perpetrated. And historically, it ends with their firing, and there is no accountability in the courts because our current DA, Jackie Lacey, does not try cops, basically, as a rule. There are people running for this office, George Gascon and Rachel Rossi, who have said that they'll take a harder line with the police department. George Gascon, as we've talked about, was a former DA of San Francisco and actually got some criticism there for being light on police in general. But you have to imagine that either of them would take a harder line on this issue than Jackie Lacey has. But, I mean, it is... At the same time, we're also waiting on body camera footage in the Victor Valencia shooting, which they have to release within a certain number of days. Mm-hmm. And that has not come out yet. And I'm not sure what we'll see there. But
yeah,
it might not be the
director's cut.
The Yeah, you said it. The thing about the police interactions, I feel like you kind of mentioned Hayes a couple weeks ago when we first got the initial reports, but before the information about Victor Valencia's identity was released, that the way that the police respond in these situations is extremely predictable. If there is a weapon of any description, whether it is what they initially said they were looking for or not, they post pictures of it immediately. If there is anything that they think could possibly be used to absolve them, even if it requires, as Alyssa mentioned, the sort of doctoring or editing of body cam footage, they do it immediately. The fact that they are not forthcoming in providing the body cam video probably means it's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. And Alyssa, do you want to talk about, I don't think we've mentioned the reports on police use of force and how that has gone up. Did we talk about that last week when it comes to homelessness?
Yeah, we haven't talked about that before, right?
We only talked about how the violent crime against the homeless was up, not specifically about use of force.
This was a different... This was not brought up at that same press conference that I had the pleasure of watching. But yeah, this was a different data dump, or, you know, it was an LA Times story that I saw that showed that use of force against homeless residents has gone up. So the report says during the third quarter of 2019, officers used force in a 26% increase from the same period in 2018. So
against unhoused people.
So that number kind of mirrors the exact increase in crimes committed against homeless residents in the same for a year on year comparison. So that's an interesting. And it also somewhat mirrors the number of people who are experiencing homelessness.
Right. And
on
so
the
that's
streets.
Kind of how they explained it. They said, well, yeah, there are more people who are homeless.
Right.
And so, of course, we're going to commit more.
And I actually don't like the quote, though. It says there's going to be more contact with the police and persons experiencing homelessness, said Commander Donald Graham. The expected result of that will be increases in uses of force. I don't think that's the expected.
Yeah. Once again, it's just an act of God. These things just happen. It's not like a policy issue, but everything we've talked about in this episode, increasing enforcement about taking down tents and like making statistics like a part of your productivity, it's all designed to increase the number of interactions between law enforcement and people who are homeless or Black or Latinx people who are driving around. Like, the policy is in place to make these things happen.
Yeah, I will say, as another person who has seen the movie Moneyball, like the fact about Michael Moore is either the assertions that he is a data person are outright lies and he has no idea how data or statistics work, or he does understand how they work and he is using them to spread misinformation and bad narratives about what is going on in his department, because it's very easy to actually analyze the data about these use of force incidents within the context of an increasing homeless population and say whether or not you think, as the chief police officer in the city of Los Angeles, that it makes sense that we're seeing a huge spike within a single year in the number of use of force incidents that are occurring in your department. It's so easy to use data to actually determine what is going on the street level and whether or not there are policies in place that you are directly in control of that should be changed. And he's not doing that. He's just saying, well, his mouthpiece is saying, you know, like, this is just something that happens naturally. There are going to be more use of force, just like learn to love it, basically. And that is not something that we should accept from this department, and especially not now that we are seeing the city move back towards putting police front and center in interactions with homeless people.
I want to plug before we go a petition that friend of the show Jessica Craven has put up asking for Governor Gavin Newsom to put an environmentalist on the Air Quality Management District board. You may remember we played a clip of Jessica speaking to this board and suggesting that they were researching air quality around the airport and suggesting that they take the flyaway bus for the airport. And yeah, she got laughed at by the chair of the board, Bill Burke. There is not a climate expert or a climate scientist or a real environmentalist of any kind on this board. Gavin Newsom attempted to nominate an Exxon executive to the seat, but then people said, hey, don't do that.
Please don't.
Why not?
And so that was rescinded. You can find it. It's in her Twitter at Craven7 Jessica, or we'll also put it up when in our thread.
I retweeted
at
it
at the LA pod. It's around.
Account. Yeah.
But I encourage everyone to sign it. They have about 1,500 signatures and they're trying to get to 10,000. So let's make that happen. Thank you for listening to the LA podcast. We will be back next week. Bye bye.